You're listening to Cambridge 105. It's Mandy with you through until 1 o'clock today. And now joined by our Cambridge 105 vet, Hayley Baker. Good morning.
Good morning.
The first thing I ought to say is, what has been over the threshold so much in the last month since we last spoke to you as far as the vets are concerned?
Absolutely. So we're seeing a lot of injuries at the moment, I think, and it's because it's suddenly got sunny and bright and the clocks are changing. So we're definitely seeing a lot of problems like cut pads and sprains and those sort of things, because I think a lot of dog owners in particular are embracing the warm weather and going out for nice long walks and taking them to new places. And so we do often see at this time of year in particular, we start getting a lot of injuries and accidents coming in just because people are walking in unusual places and the dogs are excited about going to new spots. And so, yes, a lot of cut pads, a lot of sprains and injuries at the moment. But also we're beginning to see a lot of problems associated with, and I know this is what we're going to get onto today, parasites and flea allergies. And things like that. So it's been quite a busy couple of weeks in the vets, definitely. We're seeing a lot of things.
People translate sort of fleas and that sort of thing into really, really hot weather. But the point is that once you get them at that stage, it's almost too late to do very much about it other than grin and bear it. So now is the time, presumably.
Absolutely. I mean, we generally recommend that you should be treating for fleas all year round. It isn't something that you can treat seasonally, because what happens is that the fleas can set up in your house. And one of the most disturbing facts I think I learned about fleas when I was training is that about 90% of fleas live in the environment. So if you see a flea on your dog or your cat, there are going to be 9 others living in your house.
Oh my God.
And when you think of it like that, it's really quite horrible. And so what we try and do is explain this to owners when they get a new puppy or a new kitten, that actually it's important to try and prevent them, to try and prevent them from setting up in your house, laying their eggs and their larvae developing, because then it is quite a struggle to get rid of them. And that's why it's so important, if you do discover fleas on your animals, that it's not just about treating your animal. You have to treat the environment that they're in as well. Otherwise, what you're going to do is kill off the fleas that are on your dog or your cat, and they'll just get infested from the environment. So
climb back on again.
Absolutely. Delightful thought.
And of course, traditionally, it's this time of year. I mean, certainly in my granny's day, but I have to say that, I mean, I don't pay too much lip service to it these days because I don't have time. But spring cleaning is a huge thing, because it's at this time of year that you sort of get your vacuum pipe out and go into the corners. That's exactly what should be happening.
Absolutely.
Essentially, because you've no idea. We've all been closeted in the warm all through the winter with that lovely incubation of lovely warm and everything. And of course, with fleas, that the eggs themselves can just lie dormant for. I mean, I learnt that a few years ago now when I was decorating my dining room on a beautiful sunny day and suddenly saw this legion of interesting things climbing the ladder with me.
Oh no.
It's never happened since and has been dealt with, and it's very kind of my original cat Hetty Wainthrop to bring them in the first place. But we do have to be very aware of it. It's not just a matter of saying, oh, look, the dog's scratching behind his ear a lot.
Absolutely. And you hit the nail on the head then, that, you know, when you start spring cleaning, actually that can reactivate fleas effectively. So the vibrations from the hoovers and from your cleaning actually can stimulate them to get going again. And the dormant eggs can start hatching. So you can actually then start seeing a real problem. So definitely from this point onwards in the year, you know, it is advisable, if you do have animals, to consider treating your house to make sure that we're not seeing any reactivations of eggs and larvae, and then hoovering up afterwards so that you're removing them from the environment. And that's just going to help minimise the problem of your animals catching them.
Now, in the olden days, it used to be flea powder, which used to be absolutely disgusting. You used to cover your cat in flea powder. It used to shake itself all over the place, and it used to be a snowstorm. And it wasn't very nice to inhale that
stuff.
What sort of treatments are there available, firstly, for the house?
Absolutely. So for the house, it's a spray now that we would generally recommend. And you need to make sure that you're getting a good quality top-end one. Otherwise, it's just not going to treat all of the different life stages. So you're going to the effort, and it takes a lot of effort to spray your whole house and the carpets and the cracks. So you want to make sure that the stuff you're using is going to do it first time. Otherwise, you're going to be back there again. So generally, we advise using a kind of strong spray. The top quality ones are brilliant in the sense that they act on a part of the flea and the larvae that mammals don't have. So they don't pose any potential risk to yourself, to your children, to your animals. The only thing I do say, some of them can be absorbed into water. So if you have fish, you have to be a little bit careful.
Right.
So that's always
my caveat. Don't spray around the fish bowl.
Exactly. That then works really well. If you then hoover up a few hours later, that then should remove anything. Because actually, especially with dust mites and problems like that, if you have dust mite allergies, even if the dust mite is dead after you've treated the house, if a person comes into contact with this, and I know this from firsthand, you can still have an allergic reaction to it. So that's why it's important to hoover afterwards. So yes, that's what I generally advise to the house. And in theory, once a year should be enough. My dog has flea and mite sensitivity, so I treat my house every 3 months. And especially because as a vet, I'm probably going to unfortunately bring things
of
into my
house.
Of course,
I haven't even thought about that.
On your shoes, potentially on your clothing, which really disgusts me, but that's all part of the job. So we treat the practice on a very regular basis to make sure that nothing gets set up in there. And I take that through home as well and do that regularly just to make sure that we make there's kind of no fleas setting themselves up to start this end vicious cycle, unfortunately.
Right, so ladies and gentlemen, spring clean your house if you've got a cat or a dog or a regular visitor who is a cat or a dog. As far as prevention is concerned now with the animals, because flea treatments don't always suit the animals. So I guess you've got a trial and error?
Absolutely. So there are many, many different types of treatments. So the main ones that you're looking at are flea collars, flea tablets and flea spot-ons. And there are benefits and downsides to each different type. And it really depends on your individual animal as to what the best sort of thing is. So for example, I use a flea collar on my dog. Now, there are different degrees of flea collars and certainly some of the ones that you can buy in shops will treat any live fleas that are on your dog, but won't repel them, won't get rid of any of the larvae.
What is a flea collar then?
So what it is it's a collar that's impregnated with medication effectively. So it almost acts like a slow release. And the one that I use actually acts as a repellent. So it doesn't just, when the flea hops onto the animal and they bite, then kills it off. What it does is it actually prevents the flea from jumping on in the first place. So as I said, my dog has allergies, so I need to make sure that they don't come into contact with him. So this is why a repellent is really good. Some of the ones that you can pie in pet shops will kind of treat the fleas that are there but may not actually get rid of them from jumping on in the first place. So you just have to be careful about which one you choose. And that works really well, particularly for dogs that like swimming, because it is waterproof. So you're not going to have any issues. For example, if you use a spot on, if they go swimming, you may then lose the efficacy of that spot on. So these are all the sort of things that you have to look at. Cats, for example, some cats, if you try and get a tablet in it, you'll end up in hospital with a cat bite.
Yes.
So that's where spot-ons come in really helpful.
I use that with Molly because it is so easy and she hardly even knows it's happened.
Absolutely.
Just on the back of the neck.
Absolutely. And there are many, many different types available that treat different kind of degrees of parasites. So you have one that will treat, for example, fleas, and it may well do mites and some worms. You have another one that treats fleas and specifically ticks. So you need to try and find what you feel is most appropriate for your animal, what they're coming into contact with most. And
so where you walk them, if you're walking them in a farmer's field, you need to think about ticks and stuff like that.
Absolutely, and through woodlands and long grasses, that's where you're going to
pick up the
ticks.
If you've got a small patio garden, then
absolutely.
Maybe
then
not
actually,
so much.
Exactly. The fleas are probably more relevant and the worm side of things, and maybe not so much ticks. So it is important that not one product fits all. And that's why it's really important to have a discussion with your vet and figure out what the best sort of one is for you. And different products last different amounts of times as well. So it's really important that you know how long your product lasts for. So the collar that I use, for example, I know lasts 7 to 8 months, whereas one spot on may last a month, another spot on lasts for 3 months. So it's very important to really make sure you understand what your treatment does so that you make sure you're treating at a regular, correct interval.
And looking on the darker side, what about reactions? I mean, what sort of reactions might you come across from flea treatments?
So the biggest ones that I see is that sometimes, particularly the spot-ons, you may get a little bit of irritation at the back of the neck. Any medication, not just flea treatment, there is always the potential for an allergic reaction. And so it's difficult to say every treatment is always safe. They are safe. They are tested. We record all, you know, side effects with an organisation called the VMD who oversee veterinary medicine. medicines, and they make sure that if we are picking up any level of product that is seeming to be causing more reactions, they will send an alert out to us. It might be a particular batch or it might be a problem. And it's not just relevant to flea treatment, but all medicines in particular. Apart from that, generally flea and mite treatments and worm treatments are considered very safe. Some worm treatments will sometimes make dogs sick just purely because you are affecting their guts and their intestines. And it could just be the additives that are in it might affect, so a different type doesn't. So again, it is a case of just a little bit of trial and error sometimes. And if you find one that works, brilliant. If not, if you find it doesn't agree with your animal, then you can always try another one.
Move on. What about resistance? Because I know that a couple of years ago, it was quite big in the papers about the fact that super fleas are now avoiding all manner of treatments and are still sort of reigning supreme. Is that now a problem?
We don't tend to see it so much now, because actually flea treatments and the pharmaceutical companies have moved on and caught up. So the problem was, for a long period of time, we had a couple of flea treatments available that were very effective for a long period of time. But what we were finding is that we were maybe getting... I don't like to use the term resistance because it's never been proved that there was actually resistance to it. But I think what was happening is that we were finding that they weren't responding maybe as well as they should be. But I think that was potentially because we weren't looking at environmental treatment, or they were killing off the adult fleas, but we weren't looking at the larval stages.
Which, of course, is what we talked about a bit earlier.
Exactly.
About stopping it happening altogether.
Exactly. It's really important to make sure that you're treating the whole flea life cycle rather than just the adult flea. Mm. And nowadays, the products that we have moved on from the ones that were available 10 or 15 years ago that are still available on the market and still do work, but the ones that are available now try and target all these different areas and have a better residual activity, so they're not just active for 24-48 hours, kill off what's there and then they get reinfested, but they actually work for a prolonged period of time to try and prevent reinfestation, try and prevent them from coming back again.
Why do fleas like animals and people? I mean, what do they get out of it?
Food is the answer to that. Okay. So they feed, they get blood, and that is how they actually produce their offspring, and they allow them to feed. So it's really quite disgusting, the flea life cycle, I have to say, because they eat blood, and that blood then gets excreted in their feces, and that is what is then eaten by the larvae to try and get their nutrients. So it's quite a gross way of thinking of things, unfortunately. But that is what they get out of us, and that's why they jump on, they feed, and then they jump off again.
And the eggs?
Yep, so the eggs live in the environment, so they don't lay eggs on the animals. They're in the environment, and then during times like this sort of weather, they then reactivate and start hatching.
Ah, oh, goodness me. It's lovely, isn't it, really, one way or another?
Delightful topic for the morning.
I want to talk about the knock-on effects next of fleas, because you mentioned sort of very briefly about some flea treatments will cover several ills. So I'd like to talk about sort of ticks and also worms, because if you've got a pet dog and a couple of toddlers, you need to think about that very seriously.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about that a little bit more. Our vet is in the house, Hayley Baker from Vets for Pets. And certainly, if you've got any sort of questions regarding the subject we're talking about, or if there is something niggling in the back of your mind and you just want to sort of just have an intelligent answer to something, and I say that with great pride, actually, because I have been through the veterinary surgeries over the years, and, well, I won't say any more than that, other than the fact that I'm very pleased that Molly Broom is being looked after by Hayley. 07919 070490, if you want to text in, or you can email studio@cambridge105.co.uk. And Hayley Baker, our Cambridge 105 vet, is with me this morning. We've been talking creepy crawlies, essentially fleas. But Hayley, let's come on to talk about some of the other things that we can protect our pets against. You've mentioned worms and you've mentioned ticks. Let's deal with worms first, because they really are quite something.
Absolutely.
And apologies to anyone having an early lunch.
So there are kind of, I suppose, four main types of worms that we are concerned about in dogs and cats. And actually, the main reason we're worried about them is not so much the effect that they have on the animals themselves, but the effects that they can have on us as people. And that's what we worry about, is that potential transmission of these worms to ourselves. And sometimes it can be as simple as they transmit a roundworm or a threadworm, something like that, that can cause a bit of gastrointestinal upset or potentially tapeworm, which wouldn't be so pleasant, but can be treated easily. But there are more severe types of worms, for example, Toxocara, that we need to be really aware of and cautious with, and it can lead to blindness. So it is
in people.
It is something that is transmitted in dog and cat feces, and the worry is that if small children are playing in gardens, the big issue is, for example, sand pits. Cats love to go and poo in sand pits.
Yes.
And this is unfortunately an area where you may not even notice that it's happening. So routinely,
because they're very good at covering it up, aren't they?
Absolutely. So routinely actually deworming your animal is really important from a public health point of view, as well as from the animal's
health.
Because
this is the way the worms leave the animal's body.
Absolutely.
But then, of course, they're still alive.
Absolutely. So that's how they can be transmitted. So it is very important. And our general rule of thumb is that you should be worming your dog at least kind of four times a year. But if you are pregnant, if you have young children, you can do it as regularly as every month to try and ensure that you're not seeing any problems. And there is one particular type of worm that if you're using a worming tablet for, we do recommend worming monthly for, and that's lungworm, which isn't a problem for humans, but can cause quite a severe issue for dogs. And it's something that we are seeing as, I suppose, an emerging disease over the last 5-10 years. And it's something that the latest statistics show we've seen about 500 cases within a 50-mile radius of Cambridge itself.
My goodness.
So it is something that's becoming more and more relevant. And this is something that we see in both dogs and cats, but it's the
Where does it come from?
So it's actually coming from slugs and snails. So it's dogs that eat slugs and snails will transmit the lungworm to the animal. And the problem is it can cause a life-threatening problem. It goes into the lungs and it can start causing issues with their breathing. It can cause a cough. But the big problem is it starts causing clotting problems, and the dog isn't actually able to clot its blood properly. And we can actually see death from this condition. So it's something that we are, as vets, trying to make owners more and more aware of, because it is actually very relevant, very out there, and a real issue. And it's something that we're trying to get across to people, that you need to treat your animals monthly for this lungworm to try and prevent it. It is a treatable condition. If your dog gets it, we can treat it as long as it's picked up early. But if
what would the signs be?
So often very early signs are that they might have a bit of a cough that doesn't really kind of go away, and you may see a little bit of blood coming up in that cough as well. And if you see that, I would definitely get your dog checked out ASAP. If it is in slightly more advanced stages, you may see that the whites of the eyes go a bit bloodshot, or you may see that the dog is developing bruises abnormally that you wouldn't expect. And if you see those, then you need to get your dog
Why bruises?
So it's because of the fact that the worm is actually causing a clotting problem. So it's actually stopping the blood from clotting. So if a dog goes and knocks itself against something, which dogs are very prone to doing, you'll notice that what would normally be a small bruise may end up even causing a big blood clot to form underneath the skin.
My goodness me. I mean, I'm sorry I asked, actually. So, and of course, dogs will, they will go out, they will hoover up anything that's
absolutely
lying around.
Absolutely, my two love them. So, you know.
What, snails?
Absolutely.
Oh,
I think they're slightly crunchy for them, so a bit of texture. No, they do seem to be drawn to them for some reason, and even just by licking them, it can transmit the worms. So it's very important if your dog is going out in your garden, you have slugs and snails out there, I definitely would be making sure you're treating regularly.
I'm suddenly jumping to the aspect of the fact that those of us that are strong gardeners, if they're treating snails and slugs with nasty stuff, that's also then a problem.
I suppose that's a potential issue, yes, absolutely.
They're starting to eat things that have died. Oh, right. Tapeworm. Now, traditionally, when your dog starts sliding its bottom along the carpet, that's usually a sort of a way of saying, oh, I wonder what's going on there. Obviously, we don't want to encourage people to wait that long, but that's a symptom. Are there other symptoms to do with tapeworm? I mean, eating, that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. So what we tend to find is if they do pick up tapeworm, that they may be a little bit bloated, that their poo is going to be a bit runny, and they might be a bit hungrier than normal. So that's generally the
Because they're feeding things.
Absolutely. So their intestines are being infected by these worms, affected by the worms, and causing the food not to be absorbed properly. And that's where you get this diarrhea, you get this gassy build-up in their intestines, and they're constantly hungry because they're just not absorbing the nutrients properly. And those are the kind of the tapeworms that we see in the UK. And interesting, actually, I should mention, having talked about fleas, fleas transmit one type of tapeworm. So if you're not treating for fleas regularly, you aren't getting your worms under control either.
Right, so it's very important.
It's important to treat the both of them to make sure that you've got complete control. What we're seeing, and luckily there haven't really been any cases so far, but with the way that the new pet travel scheme works, being able to take dogs and cats much more freely across to Europe, there is a type of tapeworm called Echinococcus, and it poses a real threat. Again, not so much to the dog or the cat, but to a human. It is can cause very significant diseases in humans if picked up. Our concern as vets is that we're going to see it start moving from the continent over to the UK. Mm. And so for that reason, it is important to just regularly be treating your animals as
well. We need a Brexit for worms then, don't we?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
what we need. Now, as far as the tick aspect goes, and I mean, when I used to have dogs, I used to find these things absolutely fascinating, because I had a sort of a Labrador cross Alsatian, and he used to just pick them up whenever he felt like it, really. But they are a particularly nasty creature, and I have to say that in the olden days I used to burn them off with matches. I know that sounds completely mad, but
no,
it sort of worked.
And it's one of the ways, and the other way that I've heard to remove them is actually put Vaseline over them. Now, I have to say, I would discourage this.
Of course you would.
The reason for that is twofold. So, it's not particularly pleasant, and you could end up accidentally burning your dog. But the other problem is that by doing that, you're actually potentially causing the tick to regurgitate. Especially with the Vaseline, because they suffocate and it causes them to regurgitate when they're panicking. The regurgitation...
Which means they open their jaws.
They open their jaws and they effectively vomit into the dog. And unfortunately, that is how they transmit the diseases that they carry. So what you're doing by doing that is potentially putting your dog or cat at an increased risk of picking up one of these diseases. So best thing to do is, if you're able, you can get tick hooks that you use to basically twizzle the tick around, and then it should come out in one go.
A tick hook?
A tick hooks. So they're these tiny, as they sound like, these little hooks that you put around the tick, and you just turn them around, and what it does is it dislodges them, so you can then pull them off without them leaving any of their head inside.
We should get you to describe what a tick looks like. I know what they look like, but describe it.
So they are basically these, I think the best way to describe them, these tiny little heads with a big bag on the back of them, and they've got these little wiggly legs at the front, and they have two small bits of pincers right off the top, and those are the bits that can be left behind if you just pull them out. And that causes a whole nother problem. If you leave those heads behind, you can actually get what's called a tick granuloma forming. So it's not formed because of the tick itself, but because you're leaving effectively foreign material behind. And these granulomas are effectively the body's way of walling off this foreign material and trying to protect the body. But sometimes they end up needing to be surgically removed because they don't resolve by themselves.
So that's why it forms a crust around it.
Exactly, and it can look like a big lump. And sometimes they can be several centimetres across. They can look red and angry and sore. And we can try and medically manage them, and sometimes antibiotics and anti-inflammatories, and they will resolve. But I've had to remove them surgically before as well. So it is important, if you do find a tick on your dog, not to just pull it off. Really make sure that you either get shown by your vet or your vet nurse how to remove ticks with a tick hook. It is something that owners can do at home, absolutely.
That's a good thing to do. I mean, to go in there and have some proper professional advice before you start messing about.
And our nurses are always happy to show that sort of thing. That's what they're there for, to interact with the client and try and help you to not have to come to the vets, if that makes sense. So if we can teach you to do something at home, brilliant.
You mustn't say that. Oh dear, we want to keep you forever. My goodness. Ticks, something to watch out for. What we're really talking about today is prevention.
Absolutely.
So what sort of kit should people now have in their pet cupboard for all the things that we've been talking about?
So really, for prevention for ticks, there are a couple of ways that you can go about it. So as I mentioned earlier, there are collars that you can get that will repel ticks, and there are also tablets that you can get for dogs or spot-ons for cat that will repel ticks, because you want something that repels. You ideally don't want to have the tick bite for them to then take up the active ingredient that then gets rid of them, if that makes sense.
So you want the tick to look at it and say, well, I'm not going for that one.
Absolutely, because it any time a tick bites, there is a potential transmit diseases. And so if we can stop them from biting in the first place, that's the best thing. The other thing I generally recommend is that if you have a dog that is prone to ticks and you've taken them out for a walk, it is good to give them a comb and a brush through afterwards. So if you can see one that hasn't fully attached yet, you can get it off before it attaches. So those are my two things that I suggest to dogs that are prone to it. Make sure that you've got something that repels the ticks, and then make sure that you go over your dog effectively with a fine tooth comb afterwards to try and pick out any before they fully attach.
And the preventions, are they also okay for younger animals? I'm thinking kittens and puppies, or is there a different strain of medication required for that?
So there'll be different strengths depending on the animal's size, and most products are licensed for over 12 weeks use of age. But again, each product is slightly different. Some are from 6 weeks, so you can.
And they
use
shouldn't
them
be
younger.
Going out before then, should they?
No, because they won't be vaccinated and up to date by that point, so you shouldn't be at any theoretical risk. The worms, though, you want to be treating from 2 weeks of age. So it's very important to treat them every couple of weeks.
Because they're born with them?
Absolutely. So the mother can actually transmit some to them, and they can transmit in milk as well, in the milk that they're drinking from their mother. So that's why it's important to regularly treat them, particularly when they're younger. And actually, we treat them more labour-intensively when they're younger and then less as they get older. So our rule of thumb is every two weeks until they're about 12 weeks of age, every month after that until they're 6 months, and then every 3 months after that. So sounds like a bit of a mouthful, but it does then really try and decrease the risk of them having anything and
passing
anything.
Well, and for every owner of a cat and dog or rabbit, indeed for that matter, because I even mentioned the rabbits, it is something that is a responsibility that has to be taken on.
Absolutely.
Thank you for all your fabulous advice, as always. We look forward to seeing you next month. Finally, of course, you will be on the Riverside on Sunday. We should say that Rob Baker, who appeared on the show in the first part of the programme today, is your nearest and dearest. He's your husband.
Indeed.
And so you have spent a lot of time, I gather, on the water or watching him go past at great speed.
Absolutely. I mean, so I used to row myself as well. And so it is something that in our family in particular is a really, really important part. And Rob is a fantastic coach, and I'm so proud of what he's achieved, I have to say. And I am very, very excited about this weekend and the potential of a Cambridge victory, which is what everyone is obviously hoping for. And I'm going to be there at the finish with our daughter, cheering him along, and just wish them all the best of luck.
So if you want to see Hayley in surgery on Sunday, you can't, basically.
I'm afraid I'm not there.
unless you're taking your dog or cat down to the River Thames, and we suggest that you don't do that, because I think they've got enough on, haven't they, really?
Absolutely.
One way or another, as far as that's concerned. Thank you, as always, for bringing in your wonderful knowledge. And I think that we're all now going to go out and get our kits. Don't forget to try and make an appointment at your local vet, or you will find Hayley if you want to, because there's going to be a queue down the corridor. Obviously, at Vets for Pets, and there are two branches of Vets for Pets in Cambridge, but you're only at one of them.
So I only work at the Barmore Road one predominantly, but our Beehive Centre branch, we are effectively one practice split over two sites. So
fantastic. So there you go. So that's Hayley Baker, and Hayley will be back with us next month here on Tuesday mid-morning to offer yet more advice on our furry and feathered friends.